one of the great things about Shakespeare is there always seems to be a, quote, new play that we haven't heard before, such as the case with the upcoming production at Cincinnati Shakespeare Company, Richard II. And joining me this evening is the artistic director of the Shakespeare Company, Brian Isaac Phillips. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Richard II is a history play, and although it's probably one of the earlier ones in terms of the story of English history, it's actually not one of his earliest plays.
Correct. He penned it in 1595, and if you look at the quote-unquote history cycle that moves from Richard II into Henry IV, Henry V, Henry VI, and Richard III, Henry VI and Richard III he actually did earlier in his career and then came back and almost did like a prequel, I guess you could say, by going and doing Richard II, the two Henry IVs and Henry V.
Now, most people in terms of history or Shakespeare are more familiar with the York-Lancastrian conflict and the Henrys and all like that. And, of course, the infamous Richard III. But it's Richard II that actually gets the whole ball of wax rolling.
If you are a fan of the Hal Falstaff story in Henry IV, if you're a fan of Richard III as a villain, Richard II is the play that sets all of those events in motion. So if you are watching Henry IV, you've got this really great story between Falstaff and how he's going to go from a mess up of a kid to one day being the king of England. But the other plot to Henry IV is, of course, Henry IV, who is conflicted about how exactly he acquired the throne, and those events take place in Richard II. And, of course, Richard III is considered the scourge of God because the villainy and butchery that he sort of lays across the whole royal house in Richard III, that is said to be a direct revenge for what happens to Richard II here almost 100 years earlier in history.
One of the curious things is contemporary audiences tend to be drawn more to the Henry V's and the Richard III productions. Why do you think that Richard II isn't produced nearly as often?
I think that it doesn't contain as much humor and as much action as some of the other history plays. But it is a very beautiful play in its own right. It's been very fascinating working on it, especially right after such a close election season, to sort of hear these arguments about the effectiveness and the nature of leadership. Harold Bloom, at least, considers it one of Shakespeare's trilogy of his most lyrical plays. So you've got Romeo and Juliet as his most lyrical tragedy, A Midsummer Night's Dream as his most lyrical comedy, and Richard II as his most lyrical history. Now, we've produced Romeo and Juliet back in the fall. We have Richard Midsummer's coming up. So if you join us this year, you get to actually sort of hear the three most lyrical of Shakespeare's plays in the three different mediums. And it is some of the most beautiful language you will hear in any history play.
In fact, if you were in England, perhaps one of the most well-known quotes describing England comes from Richard II.
Correct. It is this England speech, which is a long, what we call a purple passage that John of Gaunt has early in the play. I believe it's Act 2, Scene 1. It's fascinating. It's a really great example of how these purple passages can be lifted from Shakespeare and used as quotes in and of themselves. For example, this passage was used by Churchill during World War II. It was also used by the England's Tourism Council in the 80s. But it really is actually a long commentary on the corruption and fall of English majesty under Richard II's reign. So it's very central to the plot of Richard II, but is beautiful to listen to in and of itself.
Now, while it doesn't have the intrigue and backstabbing of a Richard III, it doesn't have the battles of the Henry plays. The Richard, as you said, being an election year, the Richard II play has a lot to do with loyalty and allegiance and patriotism.
The key components to the argument that the play sets forth is that Richard II, being the King of England, is considered God's chosen ruler of England. And Henry Bolingbroke is coming forward and saying that the practices with which Richard is running the kingdom are not necessarily good for the English people, and Henry is much more popular with the English people. So when should or shouldn't somebody be allowed to rule? Because they've been put in that place by God, should they be allowed to continue to hold that throne no matter what, or should the best person for the job actually be hired for the job?
Shakespeare Company is a resident company, bringing in guest artists from time to time. Who all is involved in this particular cast?
This is a really great lineup. We've got Brent Vimtrup, who just played Algernon for us in The Importance of Being Earnest. He's playing the title role. Giles Davis is coming back to join us as the Earl of Northumberland. Janeel Joplin, who audiences may remember for many productions up at Playhouse in the Park over the years, he's playing John of Gaunt. Nick Rose is joining us as York. So it's really a really great group. It's a huge cast for us. We've got about 20 people on stage. So Shakespeare and especially the history plays take quite a few bodies to produce and to produce well. And I think we've gathered a really great ensemble together for this one.
Now, obviously, the history plays are based in history. How much does historical research and the views of Elizabethan England on that historical story play in preparing for this show?
It's a fascinating part of the research process, but sometimes you have to throw that out the window because Shakespeare himself was pretty fast and loose with history as well as with time. You've got the events of several years sort of compressed into 2 hours here, and he takes liberties for dramatic purpose, of course. So we encourage the ensemble and the designers to do their research and see if there are things that they can mine from history that will help illuminate the play or inspire a choice that they have. But if history and the play don't exactly match up, which is frequently the case, we'll go with the play every time.
One of the things that a lot of audiences know from Shakespeare productions at your theater is the fact that stylistically choices are maybe not mainstream. You just recently did a Titus Andronicus that was done in steampunk style. What is the stylistic view on Richard II?
Richard II is going to be a traditional staging, so we are going to have historically accurate costumes and set pieces. We try to vary it up within the season so that our audience is getting some traditional stagings, some historically accurate stagings, some contemporary stagings, and sometimes things like the steampunk Titus that are just a lot of fun. But our production of Richard II will be historically accurate.
In terms of the production, what have been some of the challenges that you've come across? Is this a play that's particularly easy to produce? Is it a play that is taking some extra effort in certain areas?
Yeah, I don't think that it's necessarily easy to produce. There's not a whole lot of action, and there are no clowns, basically, to sort of distract from the essential plot. There's not a lot of subplots going on, so it's pretty straightforward, but that means that you have to make sure that the text is as clear as can be so that the audience can follow exactly what's going on. These are events that are not necessarily easy access knowledge for all of us as actors and directors and designers putting on the play, or us as Americans, because it's not our history. So we have to make sure that we are doing the best job possible in illuminating the text through rehearsal so that our audience is able to follow the story without any confusion at all.
And, of course, the master of the ship for this whole production would be the director, and that is?
That's me. Uh-huh. So if you can't hear it, it's my fault.
Have you enjoyed directing this play?
I have, very much. Cincinnati Shakespeare Company we're coming to the conclusion of a very long journey that started 10 years ago. Each season, we've been doing one play from the canon that CSC has never produced, that maybe Cincinnati has never seen, and they're the problem plays, the less produced plays. And that started in 2004 with Pericles. Next season, our 20th anniversary, we will conclude with Two Noble Kinsmen, and we will be one of six or seven theaters in North America to produce the 38-play Shakespeare canon. And so I have had the opportunity to sort of visit each of these plays that a lot of artists don't get to work on, a lot of audiences don't get to see, and everyone has produced a new challenge. But the thing that has been most exciting through the entire process and the entire journey has been being able to approach these plays as if they are new, as if it's the first time it's being produced. We get to throw away some of the preconceived notions that can haunt you when you're working on a Romeo and Juliet or a Hamlet. We get to bring this to life and in some ways define it for CSC and define it for our audience. The most rewarding outcome that we've been able to sort of achieve again and again is when audience members walk out and say, I do not understand why that play is not produced more. I think that we're going to be able to achieve that again here with Richard, and I encourage everybody to see it because it is a rare opportunity and there is a lot of gold in this play.
Well, that's the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company's production of Richard II, opening on January the 11th. I'd like to thank this evening's guest, Brian Isaac Phillips, the artistic director of the company, as well as director of Richard II. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
For more information on Richard II and all of the shows at Cincinnati Shakespeare Company, please be sure to visit our website at wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, this is Jim Stump. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.